Welcome to Base by Base. Today we're going to explore some really fascinating research looking at how specific genetic glitches in certain leukemias might actually create targets for our own immune system.
That's right. We're looking at a paper published in Cell in 2025 by one Jin Kim and colleagues. It's focused on myeloid leukemias like AML, acute myeloid leukemia, and MDS, myelodysplastic syndromes.
And these often have mutations in genes that control something called RNA splicing.
Exactly. And the central idea, the hypothesis really, is that these mutations cause mistakes in how RNA is processed missplicing, and that might lead to unique protein fragments the immune system could potentially see as foreign.
So the cancer's own errors might paint a target on its back, so to speak. Our goal today is to walk through how Kim and the team investigated this, how they found potential targets, tested the immune response, and even looked at engineering T cells to fight these leukemias.
Let's start with the setup. As you said, mutations in RNA splicing factors, genes like SRSF2 or ZRSR2, are pretty common drivers in these myeloid leukemias. Think of splicing as the cell editing its genetic messages before making proteins.
Like cutting out the unnecessary bits from the instructions.
Precisely. But when the editors, SRSF2 or ZRSR2, are mutated, that editing process goes awry. You get missplicing. Pieces might be wrongly kept in or wrongly cut out.
And this leads to different proteins.
Potentially, yes. The core hypothesis is that these misspliced RNAs could be translated into protein fragments that are completely novel things the immune system has never encountered before. Neoantigens.
Okay, so how do they actually hunt for these specific neoantigens? It must be like finding a needle in a haystack.
Well, it involved a lot of data analysis. They took large RNA sequencing data sets from myeloid leukemia patients, comparing those with the SRSF2 or ZRSR2 mutations against patients without them, and also against healthy tissues.
Looking for patterns unique to the mutated cells.
Exactly. They were searching for specific misspliced RNA versions, isoforms, that consistently popped up in the mutant cells, but were, you know, minimal or absent in healthy cells or non-mutant leukemia cells.
Were there specific criteria they used to rank these candidates?
Yes, several. They looked for consistent missplicing linked to the mutation, low expression in healthy tissues to avoid attacking normal cells, but high expression in the tumor itself. And critically, they then used computational tools.
To do what? Predict if these could actually become targets.
Right. To predict the protein fragments, usually short peptides, 8 to 12 amino acids long, that these misspliced RNAs would produce. And crucially, they predicted whether these peptides would likely bind to common HLA class I molecules.
Ah, the HLA system. That's the machinery cells use to display fragments on their surface for T cells to inspect, isn't it?
That's the one. Specifically, they focused initially on HLA-A02.01, which is very common in the population.
Right.
They wanted peptides unique to the misspliced form and predicted to bind strongly to these HLA molecules.
So this filtering process narrowed it down.
It did. It gave them a manageable list of high-priority candidates, 56 linked to SRSF2 mutations and 19 linked to ZRSR2 mutations, ready for experimental validation.
Okay, so they have this list of predicted targets. But prediction is one thing. How did they actually test if these peptides could, you know, physically bind to HLA and stimulate T cells?
Good question. They moved into the lab for validation. First step, HLA binding. They synthesized the candidate peptides and used an assay, a T2-HLA-A2 shift assay, to see if they could physically stabilize HLA-A02.01 molecules in vitro. Basically, does the peptide fit onto the HLA molecule?
And did they?
Quite well, actually. They reported a pretty high success rate. About 75% of the peptides they tested showed significant binding. They used known peptides like MART1 as a positive control, so they were confident in the assay.
So the peptides can sit on the HLA platter, but does that mean the immune system, soldiers, the T cells, actually notice them?
That was the next critical test. Immunogenicity. Could these peptides activate T cells from healthy donors who presumably hadn't seen these specific cancer peptides before?
How do you test that?
They took immune cells, specifically peripheral blood mononuclear cells, or PBMCs, from healthy HLA-A02.01 positive donors. They stimulated these cells with the candidate peptides, let the T cells potentially react and multiply, and then re-stimulated them later, measuring T cell activation markers.
Like checking if the T cells release alarm signals.
Exactly. Things like interferon gamma, IFNG, and TNF alpha. They use techniques like intracellular cytokine staining, ICS, and ELISpot to quantify this response.
And did they find peptides that could wake up these T cells?
They did. Several peptides turned out to be immunogenic, meaning they could activate T cells from multiple healthy donors. They highlighted a few derived from genes like RHOT2, C16R70, and importantly one called CLK3.
So proofs that these missplicing events can generate things T cells recognize.
Yes. And they went further. They used tools called peptide HLA dextramers, basically tagged complexes of the peptide and HLA molecule, to specifically identify and isolate the CD8 plus T cells that were reacting to these neoantigens. This confirmed they could indeed prime these killer T cells in vitro.
But were these peptides actually being produced and presented by the real leukemia cells, not just in lab tests?
Crucial point. They tackled this using HLA immunoprecipitation followed by mass spectrometry. Essentially, they pulled the HLA molecules off the surface of mutant leukemia cell lines and analyzed exactly which peptides were bound to them.
And did they find their candidates?
Yes, they confirmed that several of these missplicing-derived peptides, including ones from RHOT2 and CLK3, were endogenously processed and presented by the HLA molecules on these mutant cells. Okay, let's zoom in on that CLK3 peptide you mentioned, RLWGTWVKA. Why was that one particularly interesting?
That CLK3 peptide stood out because it was the one most frequently recognized by T cells across the different healthy donors they tested.
Yeah.
It seemed particularly immunogenic.
And what's the specific missplicing event behind it? It's tied directly to the SRSF2 mutation. This mutation promotes the skipping of a specific part, exon 4, of the CLK3 gene's RNA message. This skipping results in a frame shift and a premature stop, leading to a truncated abnormal CLK3 protein. A fragment of this abnormal protein is the neoantigen peptide.
So a specific error leads to a specific faulty protein piece that T cells can see.
Exactly. And the data back this up. They found this aberrant CLK3 isoform was significantly upregulated in leukemia patients with the SRSF2 mutation, looking across both AML and MDS cohorts.
Did they investigate the RNA itself further?
They did. They showed that this misspliced RNA seems to be subject to something called nonsense-mediated mRNA decay, or NMD, which is like a cellular quality control system that degrades faulty RNAs.
Mm-hmm.
When they inhibited NMD, the levels of this misspliced CLK3 RNA went up in the mutant cells.
Which suggests it is being made and is available to be translated into protein even if the cell tries to get rid of it.
Right. And as we mentioned, they directly confirmed the resulting peptide was presented on the cell surface using mass spectrometry on SRSF2 mutant cell lines.
So you have this promising, naturally presented neoantigen, CLK3. If it's immunogenic, can you actually isolate the T cell receptors, the TCRs, that recognize it?
Yeah.
And maybe use them?
That was precisely the next step. They used those CLK3 peptide HLA dextramers again, this time to fish out and sort the specific CD8 plus T cells that recognize the CLK3 neoantigen from their activated healthy donor samples.
And once they had those specific T cells?
They performed single cell sequencing, looking at both the RNA and the TCR sequences within individual cells. This gave them a detailed picture of these cells and, crucially, the genetic sequences of their unique TCRs, the very receptors binding to the CLK3 neoantigen.
So they captured the key for the CLK3 lock. What did they do with these TCR sequences?
They cloned them. They took these identified TCR sequences and genetically engineered them into fresh primary human T cells, essentially creating batches of T cells reprogrammed to specifically target the CLK3 neoantigen.
TCR engineered T cells, or TCR T cells. How do they test if these engineered cells work?
Yeah. Rigorously. They first confirmed that these engineered T cells did, in fact, bind to the CLK3 dextramer, showing the receptor was functional on the surface. Then they tested their reactivity. When they co-cultured these TCR T cells with target cells presenting the CLK3 peptide, they saw strong activation release of IFN gamma, TNF alpha, the works.
Did they test against cells making the actual misspliced protein?
Yes. They electroporated target cells with the misspliced CLK3 mRNA, forcing them to produce and present the neoantigen, and again, the engineered T cells reacted strongly. Some of the TCRs they identified were incredibly potent, reacting to even tiny amounts of the peptide down to picomolar concentrations.
Wow, very sensitive. That sounds promising for therapy.
It does. And importantly, some showed CD8 independence, meaning they didn't rely as heavily on other co-receptor interactions, which can be beneficial. They also demonstrated specific killing in vitro. The CLK3 TCR T cells efficiently lysed target cells that were HLA-A02.01 positive and expressed the misspliced CLK3, but they left alone cells with the normal CLK3 or cells lacking the correct HLA type.
Okay, impressive lab results.
Yeah.
But the crucial test is always, Do these engineered T cells recognize and kill actual leukemia cells with the mutation?
Absolutely. They moved on to test this directly. They used an AML cell line called KO52, which naturally has the SRSF2P95H mutation, and they engineered it to also express the HLA-A02.01 molecule needed for presentation.
The perfect target cell, basically.
Right. And when they mixed their engineered CLK3 TCR T cells with these HLA-A02.01 plus KO52 cells, they observed specific cytolytic activity. The T cells got activated, markers like CD69 and 41BB went up, and the target leukemia cells underwent apoptosis or programmed cell death.
And importantly, was it specific?
Yes. They showed this killing didn't happen if the KO52 cells lacked HLA-A02.01 or if they used other AML cell lines that had wild-type normal SRSF2, unless, of course, they artificially loaded those cells with the CLK3 peptide itself.
Okay, cell lines are one thing. What about cells straight from patients?
That's perhaps the most critical piece of in vitro validation. They took bone marrow or peripheral blood cells directly from AML patients who had both the SRSF2 mutation and the HLA-A02.01 type. They co-cultured these primary patient leukemia samples with the CLK3 TCR T cells.
And the result?
They saw clear signs of activation in the engineered T cells. This confirmed that the TCR T cells could recognize the CLK3 neoantigen as it's naturally processed and presented on the surface of real patient leukemia cells. Control experiments using cells from healthy donors or SRSF2 wild type patients showed no such activation.
Did they check if the TCRs might hit other things? Off-target effects are a big concern.
They did. They performed alanine scanning, modifying the peptide sequence to see which parts were critical for recognition. They also scanned the entire human proteome computationally to see if the TCRs might recognize similar sequences from normal proteins. For some of the most promising TCRs, the CLK3 neoantigen appeared to be the only sequence they recognized.
That's very encouraging for safety. So it works in dishes, against cell lines, against patient cells. What about in a living system? Did they test it in vivo?
Yes, they moved to a mouse model. They used immune-deficient mice, NSG mice, which can accept human cell grafts. They injected these mice with the KO52 leukemia cells, the ones with the SRSF2 mutation, and HLA-A02.01, which were also engineered to express luciferase, a marker that lets them track tumor growth using imaging.
So they established the leukemia in the mice, then what?
Then they administered the engineered CLK3 TCR T cells. They tested a couple of their lead TCR candidates, like TCR9 and TCR11, comparing the outcomes to mice that received control treatments like saline or T cells engineered with an irrelevant TCR targeting a virus.
And did the CLK3 targeted T cells make a difference?
They absolutely did. The mice treated with the CLK3 TCR T cells showed significantly reduced tumor burden compared to the control groups. In a model where they let the tumors get larger before treatment, the TCR T cell therapy led to significantly prolonged survival.
Any signs of toxicity in the mice?
They reported no significant weight loss or other obvious signs of severe toxicity related to the treatment in these models, which is a positive initial sign. This really provided the in vivo proof of concept. Targeting these missplicing-derived neoantigens with engineered T cells can have a potent anti-leukemic effect.
Okay, this is incredibly compelling work. Engineering T cells seems to work, but it loops back to a question you raised earlier. If these neoantigens are there and potentially immunogenic, why do the patients still have leukemia? Why isn't their own immune system doing the job?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And the researchers dug into this directly by analyzing the T cells circulating in the blood of patients with these spliceosome mutant leukemias. They used sophisticated tools like barcoded dextramers combined with single-cell sequencing to find and characterize any T cells naturally present that might recognize these neoantigens.
Did they find any?
Yes, they did. They found that CD8 plus T cells reactive to these missplicing-derived neoantigens were present in the patient's blood. Not only present, but often clonally expanded, meaning they had multiplied, presumably in response to seeing the neoantigen.
So the patient's immune system does see the target and tries to react.
It seems so. But, and this is a huge but, when they looked closely at the characteristics of these neoantigen-reactive T cells and compared them to T cells from the same patients fighting common viruses like CMV.
What was the difference?
The neoantigen-reactive T cells had a distinctly different and apparently less functional phenotype. Their gene expression patterns showed reduced activity in key pro-inflammatory pathways, like TNF-alpha signaling. They looked, for lack of a better word, dysfunctional or perhaps exhausted.
Ah. So They're present, they've seen the target, but they're somehow shut down or tired out.
That appears to be the case in patients with active disease. This dysfunction could be a major reason why the leukemia persists despite the immune system's ability to recognize these targets.
Did they get any clues about how this might be overcome? Maybe from studying patients after stem cell transplant?
Yeah.
Transplants can be curative, partly due to the donor immune cells attacking the leukemia, the graft versus leukemia effect.
Exactly. They looked at patients who had received curative allogeneic stem cell transplants, and here they found something quite different. Post-transplant, they observed the emergence and expansion of donor-derived T cells that were reactive to these same missplicing neoantigens. They used the RhoT2 neoantigen as an example here.
Donor T cells targeting the neoantigen. And were these cells different from the patient's pre-transplant T cells?
Markedly different. Unlike the patient's own apparently exhausted T cells, these donor-derived neoantigen-reactive T cells showed an activated cytotoxic gene expression profile. They looked ready and equipped to kill the leukemia cells.
So this strongly suggests...
It suggests that these activated donor-derived T cells targeting the missplicing neoantigens might be a key part of why stem cell transplant works. They could be major contributors to that crucial graft versus leukemia effect. It highlights that T cells can effectively target these neoantigens if they're functional.
Okay, let's try to bring this all together. Kim and colleagues identified neoantigens arising directly from common splicing factor mutations in myeloid leukemia. They showed these are immunogenic, found TCRs recognizing them, engineered T cells with these TCRs, showed potent anti-leukemia activity in vitro and in vivo.
But they also found that the patient's own T cells targeting these neoantigens in active disease appear to be dysfunctional, while functional donor-derived T cells targeting them emerge after successful transplants. Quite a comprehensive story.
What are the broader implications here? This seems significant.
It really is. One key aspect is that because these neoantigens are tied to specific recurrent mutations, like an SRSF2, they are effectively shared neoantigens found across many different patients. This is different from many other cancer neoantigens, which are unique private mutations.
Which makes them much better targets for developing therapies.
Potentially, yes. It opens the door for developing off-the-shelf TCR T-cell therapies that could target, say, the CLK3 neoantigen in any HLA-A02.01 positive patient with an SRSF2 mutation. You could even potentially target multiple such neoantigens simultaneously.
And what about timing? Could you use this earlier?
That's a really interesting question the authors raise. These splicing factor mutations often appear very early in pre-malignant states like CHIP or CCUS. Could targeting these neoantigens then, maybe even with a vaccine, prevent progression to full-blown leukemia? It's speculative, but a fascinating idea.
But the T-cell dysfunction problem remains a hurdle for active disease, doesn't it?
It does. It suggests that simply providing the T-cells, or even trying to vaccinate, might not be enough if the leukemia environment is actively suppressing them. Strategies to overcome this dysfunction, or perhaps combining PCR T-cells with other agents that modulate the tumor microenvironment, might be necessary.
It's clear this is a landmark study, but like all research, it likely has limitations. Did the authors acknowledge any?
Yes. They were quite upfront. A major one is the focus on HLA-A02.01. To make this approach broadly applicable, similar work needs to be done to identify neoantigens presented by other common HLA types and find TCRs for those.
Makes sense. Anything else?
They also mentioned the potential for targeting neoantigens presented by HLA class 2 molecules, which are recognized by CD4 plus helper T cells and could be particularly relevant for vaccine strategies. The mouse models, while providing proof of concept, are still limited. They're immune deficient, so they don't fully capture the complex interplay with a patient's own suppressed immune system or potential toxicities.
And the mechanism of T cell dysfunction needs more work.
Definitely. Really understanding why the endogenous T cells become dysfunctional in active disease is critical for figuring out how to best apply these therapies, when to give them, and what combinations might work best.
So this research really paints a picture of cancer's own genetic mistakes, creating vulnerabilities, but also highlights the challenge of overcoming the immune suppression that often accompanies active disease.
It shows this intricate dance. The immune system can see these specific targets created by the splicing mutations, but in the context of established leukemia, that response seems to get stalled or exhausted.
It really leaves you thinking, doesn't it? The fact that the patient's own body generates T cells against these targets, but they falter. Is the key unlocking the potential of those existing suppressed T cells? Or is creating these highly potent engineered T cells really the most effective path forward for tackling these leukemias? It's a question that future research will hopefully answer.
This base-by-base analysis was based on the open access article titled "Missplicing-Derived Neoantigens and Cognate TCRs in Splicing Factor Mutant Leukemias" by Won Joon Kim and colleagues, published in the journal Cell in 2025. Because it's an open access article published under a CC BY 4.0 license, the full text is freely available for you to read yourself. You'll find the DOI and a link to the license in the description. Thanks for joining us.